This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday for another hour of old-time radio crime. We begin this week with Dragnet and the Big Little Jesus, their story from December 21st, 1954. After that, it's Nightbeat and 5 days off for Christmas. That one aired December 21st, 1951.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. Dragnet. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to burglary division. You get a call that an important piece of religious art has been stolen from the oldest church in Los Angeles. There's no lead to its whereabouts. Your job? Find it. Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, December 24th. It was cold in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of burglary division. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Captain Bernard. My name's Friday. I'd gone across the street to buy stamps for some Christmas cards I was sending out. It was 9:15 a.m. when I got back to room 45. Burglary. I sat down at a table in the squad room and I started to address the cards when Frank walked in carrying a stack of Christmas boxes.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Christmas cards, huh? A little late, aren't you?
Well, I was going to send them out Monday, but we had that stakeout.
You ought to get married, Joe.
Yeah?
It's the only system. Pay does all that stuff for me. Laundry, mails cards. Only system.
Might help.
I brought in your present. Want to open it now?
No, I'll wait.
I always open a couple the day before.
Why?
Well, put you in the spirit ahead of time. I opened Phil's this morning.
Who's he?
Ray's brother in Denver. Gave me a magazine, one of those funny ones.
What do you mean, a comic book?
No, one of those funny ones, you know.
No, I don't, Frank.
Well, some of the pages have holes in them. You look through and there's a picture on the next page.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those on the newsstand.
They have cloth pasted in.
Cloth?
In the ads. If you want to buy a suit, they have a sample right there.
You mean you can feel it?
Reach right out and feel it. There was one for $200.
A suit?
Sure. Cloth comes from Scotland.
What's it made out of, solid gold?
No, they got a special kind of goat over there. It's real smooth.
Not a goat, Frank. A sheep.
Well, it's a special kind of sheep, then, because a suit costs $200.
You gonna get one?
I told Faye. She said, wear the sample. Anything doing?
Fanning and Pryor were in on that market holdup.
They come up with anything?
Pound of air. Nothing else.
I hope it stays quiet. I got more shopping to do.
I finished.
What'd you get, Ann?
Stationery set. Some paper and envelopes. Leather binding.
Joe, you'll never learn.
Well, what's the matter?
No woman wants a stationery set. Get her something personal.
Well, it's got her initials on it.
No, no. You want something more sentimental. Romantic.
What'd you get, Faye?
It's different in her case.
What'd you get, Faye?
Sewing machine.
That's romantic.
Well, it isn't a way.
Why didn't you buy her a catcher's mitt?
Burglary Friday. Yes, that's right. You have the right department. All right, Father, we'll be right down. No, you can tell us about it there. Goodbye.
The old mission church, they've had a theft.
Collection money?
Statue of the child Jesus. Frank and I checked out of the office and rode over to the church at the corner of Sunset Boulevard and Main. The old Mission Plaza Church, founded 1781, the year Los Angeles became a pueblo. The outside was typical early Spanish design, complete with mission arches. It was made of adobe and painted white. They called it the Queen of the Angels. The padres from down in Mexico built it. The devout Mexicans in town still attended services there. 10:05 a.m., Frank and I crossed through the courtyard. It used to be the old stable, but the Spanish priest changed all that when it became a mission. Stonemasons paved the stable floor and made it a courtyard. They planted grapevines, trees, and flowers. A young priest crossed the courtyard to meet us. He'd been sitting on a stone bench reading his morning prayers, as priests had done here for 172 years. We asked for Father Xavier Rojas, who communicated with us. We were told he was inside. We entered a side door. The church seemed to glow with the hundreds of votive candles flickering on both sides of the altar and at the shrines throughout the church. It was empty except for a few people praying. Surrounding the main altar were several old oil paintings in gold frames. The air was heavy with the scent of Advent flowers. We found Father Rojas up near the sanctuary, looking at the nativity scene. He told us about the crib. It was a $70 duplication of the scene at Bethlehem. The parishioners had taken up a collection for it 31 years ago. It was put up every year on December 22nd and taken down after the holy season. It was beautiful, except that one of the shepherds had lost an arm, a sheep was old and cracked, and the infant Jesus was missing. Father Rojas led us back into the sacristy.
I'm sorry to bother you, man.
It's all right, Father.
Especially now, the holiday season.
We cash our checks, Father. You want to tell us what happened?
Or what you think happened?
I discovered the statue was missing right after the 6 o'clock mass.
You say the 6?
Yes. I started over to the rectory and stopped by the crib.
Was the statue there before mass?
I don't know, but it was there last night.
How late is the church open?
All night.
You leave it wide open so any thief can walk in?
Particularly thieves, Sergeant.
You say it was there last night, Father. How late?
10 or 11 o'clock. We had confessions.
No one saw it after that?
One of the altar boys. He says it may have been there. He thinks it was.
Did he see it?
He's not sure.
What's his name?
Pardon me. Here's the schedule. You'll find the names for every mass there.
Was there a big crowd at the 6 o'clock mass, Father?
Not too many. 7's the big one. People on their way to work.
Did anyone stay after mass, did you notice?
Not especially. I came back here, took off the vestments. I suppose it was 10 or 15 minutes before I went back in the church.
It was empty then?
No, people were coming in for the 7 o'clock.
Are these the altar boys, James Cornine and Joseph Heffernan?
That's right. Joe's the one who mentioned it might have been there.
Did you check with the other priests, Father?
Before I called you. None of them knows anything about it.
Just for a check on the pawn shops, how much is the statue worth?
In money?
Well, that's the point in pawn shops, Father.
Only a few dollars. We could get a new one, but it wouldn't be the same. We've had children in the parish. They've grown up and married. It's the only Jesus they know.
We understand.
And we've had children who died. It was the only Jesus they knew. So many of the people who come here are simple people. They wouldn't understand, Sergeant. It would be like changing the evening star.
We'll do our best, Father.
That's why it would mean so much to have it back for the first Mass on Christmas.
It's not very long, Father.
Less than 24 hours.
If anything turns up here, you know where to get in touch with us.
Yes. Sad, isn't it?
How's that?
In so short a time, men learn to steal.
Yes, but consider us, Father.
Us?
If some of them didn't, you and I'd be out of work. 10:50 a.m., we notified pawn shop detail. Frank and I checked out the two altar boys. The first one, James Cornine, said he knew nothing about the missing statue. The second one, Joseph Heffernan, was not at home. His father said he had a part-time job, but he'd have him get in touch with us right after lunch. By 11:30 a.m., we'd run out of book procedure. We had a man to find. Our only clue? He'd been to church. 11:33 a.m. We checked the phone books for the names of religious stores in the area. Two of them were closed. We tried the third. When we got there, the only person in the store was an elderly man sitting by a table. In front of him was a large, beautifully carved chess set.
We're police officers.
My name's Friday. This is my partner, Frank Smith.
Great to see you. Caught me in the middle of a big chess match.
Where's your partner?
Up in San Jose. We've been playing for years.
Same match?
No, just 2 or 3 months on this one. What I meant was we've been playing different matches for years.
I see.
You know, we do it through the mail. I send him a move, he sends me one.
Must keep you on your toes.
Except during the holidays, the mail gets all fiddled up. That's no good.
Guess not.
Slows things down, that's no good. I like to catch him off guard.
You Mr. Flavin?
How do you know? We never met.
Your name's on the window out front.
Mr. Flavin, we checked the other two religious stores in this neighborhood. They're closed.
This is the best one anyway. 50% European items.
We're checking the stores around the Mission Church.
For what?
Statue of the Child Jesus. Do you have one we could look at?
Sure.
No, sir, a larger one.
You don't want a larger one, unless it's for a church. That's why you want a larger one.
Could we see it, please?
It's not my due to butt in, but unless you live in a big place, this will make your living room all a kilter.
Yes, sir. Do most of the people who go to the Mission Church trade here?
Good many of them, especially the kids.
Why kids?
More religious. Check on yourself. See if kids aren't more religious than you.
Might be so.
That's what's wrong with the world. Oh, I don't mean you're wrong with it. Everybody.
Yes, sir. What if we could stick to the point, Mr. Flavin?
Sure. A lot of people from the Mission Church come in here.
Do people ever come in and sell back a religious article?
Like a prayer book or rosaries?
Yes, sir.
Second hand, you mean?
Yes, sir.
Not since I've ever been around. It's silly.
Why?
People don't have religious articles so they can get rid of them. They have them so they can have them.
But if a man had a statue and wanted to sell it, he'd come to a place like this.
Sure, but he wouldn't want to sell it.
He would if it was stolen.
No, sir. If a man was to steal a statue, he'd be crazy or something like that. The only place he'd want to go is where crazy people are.
You may be right, Mr. Flynn.
I don't know what you fellas are looking for, but if it's somebody who stole a statue, he's crazy and you won't find him. You won't find him as long as you live, or in a million years.
That should cover it. We checked religious stores out as far as Van Ness. We asked the same questions. The owners gave us the same answers, but none of them were as encouraging as Mr. Flavin. Frank and I had lunch and reported back to the office. It was 1:30 p.m. when we started into the squad room. The captain was just coming out.
I just checked for you in the lunchroom.
And we've been down on that theft at the mission.
May get some action on the Patterson case.
They locate him?
They think he's on the bus from Sacramento.
Well, that means the Bakersfield police.
We'll wait and see.
One of you fellas, Sergeant Freddy?
He is.
I'm Joe Heffernan. My father said you wanted to see me.
Sit down, son. You didn't have to come in. A phone call would have worked.
My father said to get on over. He says that any kid that uses phones is lazy.
We want to ask you about this morning. You serve 6 o'clock mass?
Yes, sir. I'm senior boy. Do I get the sixth?
You're senior and you take the early trick?
Yes, sir. That way, if you receive communion, you get to have breakfast sooner.
Father Rojas says you think the statue was there before mass.
I didn't look, but I have a feeling it was there.
A feeling?
You know, how you have a feeling about something, but you're not sure.
Did you stay around long after mass?
I put out the candles and hung up my surplice.
How long would that take?
About 5 minutes, maybe.
Did any of the people at mass stay on?
Some moms do, especially ladies.
Oh?
Maybe they don't finish in time, or else they start new prayers. I don't know.
So when you left, there were still some women there?
No, sir. That was at first. After I went back to the sacristy, there was only this one man.
What man?
He comes at 6 o'clock all the time.
Do you know his name?
No, sir. But he works down in Olive. You know, old paint shop, where they paint signs.
Could you describe him?
Sort of medium. Wearing a suit that didn't match.
Didn't match?
You know, different pants than coat.
How about his age?
Oh, he's pretty old.
Take a guess.
About 40, maybe. There's nothing particular about him.
Then why'd you notice him?
I've seen him before. And the bundle, I guess.
The bundle?
Out in front. I saw him when he was coming out. He had this bundle, and he almost dropped it.
How large a bundle?
It's hard to say.
Come on, son. Was it large or small, the size of the statue?
About that big. Yes, sir.
We located the sign shop. The suspect didn't work there anymore, but we discovered his name was Claude Stroop. We found out where he lived. 2:25 p.m. We arrived there. It was a hotel for men, mostly old men, mostly down and outers. It was called the Golden Dream.
Police officers, we're looking for Claude Stroop.
Hope Claude didn't get in any trouble.
So do we. Is he in?
No. He's got room 307. You can check if you like.
We'll take your word. Were you on this morning?
Hmm?
Yeah, the early shift.
Well, we don't have shifts. My uncle owns the place. I'm the shift.
Did Stroop spend last night here?
Came in about 11.
When did he leave this morning?
Around 6, maybe before.
Did he come back after?
8 o'clock or so. Then left. Supposed to be back at 10. And pulls this trick.
What trick?
Our program. He knows the other fellas need him.
Program?
You're here at the hotel. Every Christmas we have a program. Put up a tree and sing. They're mostly old fellas. Singing like that makes them remember back when they were kids. Then Jimmy Finn comes on.
Jimmy Finn?
He shares number 409. His family once had a lot of money, so he tells the fellas about it. Stories about Christmas. How they had this big log, and his grandfather used to start it up. And after dinner, everybody turned over his plate, and there underneath was a $20 gold piece. Brand new one.
When Stroop came in this morning, did he have a bundle?
I didn't see him come in.
You said you saw him.
I saw him go out after, but not come in.
When was that?
8. If you want to look for a bundle, I could give you his key.
We don't have a warrant.
It's all right. I know about police. It's all right with me.
It's not with us.
I didn't mean that. I just meant it was all right with me.
Good King Wester's lost lookout on the feast of Stephen.
They were three old men. You couldn't tell how much better they would have been with Stroop singing the fourth part, but somehow you didn't care. This was Christmas at the Golden Dream, and it sounded fine.
Though the cross was cruel, when the poor man came in sight, gathering winter fuel.
This is the last rehearsal. I got most of the songs down pat.
Sounds pretty good.
Yeah, that's why it's a shame Claude isn't here. He's tenor, and they need him to make it sound just right.
Does Stroop have a job?
No, sir. He used to have jobs. Not much lately, though.
Did he say where he was going?
No, he should have. The fellas need him.
When he comes in, will you call us?
Sure, and not say anything to him.
That's right.
I hope it's nothing serious for Claude. The fellas' troubles ought to be over.
Troubles?
Way back. It wouldn't count.
Tell us anyway.
Well, I don't know much about it.
As much as you know. Now, come on.
Well, something back where he used to live. Robbed somebody or something.
What else?
That's all. It was a long time ago, way far back. But he forgot it all, the robbing and everything.
No, not quite.
Hmm?
He remembered it this morning.
God rest ye merry gentlemen, let nothing you dismay. For Jesus Christ our Savior was born upon this day.
We went back to the office and ran Stroop's name through R&I. If he'd been booked anywhere, we had no record of it, at least not under that name. 4:15 p.m., pawn shop detail reported back. No object resembling the statue of the child Jesus had been turned in. 4:18 p.m., I hung up the phone.
Patterson's on that Sacramento bus.
I thought Bakersfield had it.
They were supposed to confirm. They did. Hopwork station.
What about Fanning and Pryor?
They're still out.
Well, they'll be back soon. When's the bus arrive?
6:00.
There's plenty of time for them to make it.
There's more time for you.
We're still in that theft.
Can it wait?
No.
What is it? $10, $15 statue?
When's the price determine a case?
I realize it's a church statue, but that doesn't give it priority.
It's important to them, Captain. Joe and I promised to get it back.
What do you got on it?
Nothing much.
And why are you so big-hearted?
Burglary Friday. When? No. Don't say anything. No. Right. It's Claude Stroop. He just walked into the hotel. He's our suspect.
Nobody's leaked to him?
No.
You'll keep. You can run him down tomorrow.
It'll be too late then.
I need it for the first mass in the morning, Skipper. It's kind of a big thing for them.
I'm sorry. I can't juggle details around so you can get a statue back. If there's time later on, we'll do our best.
Yes, sir.
You better get over to the station.
Yes, sir. Will you call Father Rojas over at the mission?
Why?
Tell him we're too busy to work on that statue.
Well, we'll do it later.
Tomorrow or when we get a chance.
Why can't you call him?
Well, we better get over to the station.
If Patterson's on that bus, we don't want to miss him.
All right, I'll call him.
Friday.
Yeah. I can send Fanning and Pryor. You might as well stay on that other thing.
Whatever you say, Captain.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
p.m. We arrived at the Golden Dream Hotel. The desk clerk was right. Claude Stroop looked like a man who had his troubles at bargain rates.
Your name, Claude Stroop?
Yes, sir.
Police officers, we'd like to talk to you.
I didn't do anything against the law. Honest, I didn't do anything against it.
You haven't been accused.
I want to take you downtown.
We'd like to talk to you.
No, sir, I'm not going. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going to talk to anybody.
You're half wrong already.
p.m. We returned Stroop for interrogation. He kept his word. He refused to talk. 6:05 p.m. Frank called Faye, told her he'd be a little late. Stroop didn't move for a whole hour. He sat and stared, but he didn't talk. 6:40 p.m. We got a final report from pawn shop detail. The shops were closed. There was no statue.
Stroop still hadn't talked.
Don't you ever want to go home, Stroop?
If I was to talk, you wouldn't let me go.
Depends on what you'd say.
I'd say it wrong and I wouldn't get home.
You won't this way either.
I'd like to go, you can bet on that. This is the seventh year we had the program, and I never missed a one. Not a single one.
Why don't you tell us what happened, Stroop?
How would I know you'd let me go?
You wouldn't.
I might as well anyway.
All right, what happened from Mass on?
Well, there was Mass. I came out and started down toward the hotel.
Back up.
I left my stuff at the hotel, and then I picked up George's car. I didn't steal it. He said I could have it any time I wanted. Only this time I didn't ask him. I took it and started out.
Well?
I should have asked, but I just didn't. I went over to Grand Avenue for the Christmas bulbs for this fellow sells in secondhand. It was coming out of the lot, but I did it.
Yeah.
The bumper must have caught the other car. Didn't leave too big a dent, but there was this long scratch. I got out and tried to wipe it off with my handkerchief. You know, spit on it like. Only it didn't do no good. I didn't think anybody saw. I don't know how you fellows found out about it.
I'll check auto records.
Right. Stroop, we didn't bring you down here to talk about that.
You didn't?
No. There's a statue missing from the church. A statue of the child Jesus.
You mean I took it?
You took a bundle out of church.
Yes, sir. That was my other pants for the program tonight. I had a place sewed up and there was a button on it. You can check. But I wouldn't take a statue.
I don't think you would either. He's clear at auto records. Go on home.
For the program? You mean it's all right?
Good night, Stroop.
Good night. Merry Christmas.
Where to? Well, I don't know. We could stay and work on it tonight.
Wouldn't do any good. We won't find it.
I don't think so.
No use kidding the priest. Build his hopes up.
Might as well go tell him now. Merry Christmas. p.m. We found Father Rojas. Frank told him how it was, that we couldn't get the statue back by morning, but that we'd keep trying during the week. He said he understood. We told him we had to get on. As Frank and I started to leave, the doors at the main entrance to the church opened. It was a good 200 feet away. It was hard to be sure, but it looked like a small boy drawing a bright red wagon behind him. When he got closer, you could see he was no bigger than a pint of milk. He was a luminous-eyed little Mexican boy with a face as young as yesterday. The priest seemed to know him.
Paquito?
In the back of the wagon was the missing statue of the child Jesus. He picked it up gently and walked up to the priest.
Padre Rojas?
He just stood there looking up at Father Rojas.
It's Paco Mendoza, the boy from the parish.
Ask him where he found it.
¿Dónde lo encontraste?
No lo encontré, lo cogí esta mañana.
He didn't find it, he took it.
Why?
¿Por qué?
Todos los años Paquito rezó por un camioncito rojo. Este año Paquito rezó al niño Jesús. Yo prometí al niño Jesús el primer viaje en mi camioncito.
He says all through the years he's prayed for a red wagon. This year he prayed to the child Jesus. He promised that if he got the wagon, the child Jesus would have the first ride in it.
¿Tendrá el diablo para llevar a Paquito?
He wants to know if the devil will come and take him to hell.
That's your department, Father.
No el diablo. Jesús ama a Paquito mucho.
We crossed over to the sanctuary. With the help of Father Rojas, the young boy replaced the infant Jesus in its rightful place, the crib in the nativity scene. Frank and I could have been wrong, but the small plaster statue seemed to approve. Mary, Joseph, the wise men, Gaspar, Melchior, Balthazar, the old shepherd, the young shepherd, the peasant, they all seem to approve.
Vuelve a tu casa, Paquito.
The priest told the boy to go home. He took hold of his wagon, started the long walk out of the church. There wasn't much we could say. There wasn't much to say. We just stood there and watched him go. Halfway up, he turned to look back. And he went on out.
I don't understand how he got that wagon today. Don't kids wait for Santa Claus anymore?
It isn't from Santa Claus. The firemen fix old toys and give them to new children. Paquito's family, they're poor.
Are they, Father?
You have just heard is true. The names and locations were changed. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department.
Now screen actor Frank Lovejoy comes to the NBC microphone as reporter Randy Stone on Nightbeat. But first, let me tell you about some of our other mystery features heard on this station of the NBC Radio Network. This Sunday, the Falcon brings you mystery, adventure, and intrigue as he investigates the case of the Helping Hand. Later Sunday, make a date to hear Lloyd Nolan as he brings you thrill-packed listening as Martin Kane, Private Eye. And every Monday evening, you're invited to tune to this NBC station for Dangerous Assignment, starring Brian Donlevy. Now there's Adventure with Frank Lovejoy, starring on Nightbeat on NBC. NBC presents transcribed Frank Lovejoy in Nightbeat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the night beat for the Chicago Star. Christmas Eve. Jingle bells, silent night, boughs of holly. Yeah, they say there's a warmth about Christmas that spreads out like a fan and touches everyone. The holiday spirit, it's called. But right at the moment, I'm thinking of one character who was nearly left out in the cold last Christmas. None other than yours truly. Me, myself, Randy Stone. It started out like any other Christmas Eve. An exchange of gifts, a few drinks, some off-key caroling, everybody killing time until the going-home nod from the boss. Everybody, that is, but me. No, I wasn't going home, because as far back as I can remember, Christmas has been another work day for Stone. I waited around for the noisy holiday gang to leave so I could settle down to work. And then Sam Bullock, the big boss, sent for me, and I walked across to his office.
Oh, come in, Randy, come in.
How are you, boss?
Sit down, Randy.
Oh, such politeness can mean only one thing. I'm fired.
Now, this is even more embarrassing, Randy. I'm going to give you a little something in the way of a present.
Ah, I'll come back when you're sober.
When's the last time you had Christmas off, my boy?
I can't remember why.
Well, you're having this one off. 5 days of it to spend with your family.
But what family? Boss, you know better than that. What'll I do with myself?
Well, a man who knows as many people as you do, it'll be the best thing in the world for you.
Hey, yeah. Yeah, it might really be something. Say, I could call Alex Stevens. He's been bothering me for 8 years to spend Christmas with his family.
Sure.
Or maybe Alice over in Classified. You know, I'm beginning to like the idea.
Okay, well, you'd better beat it before this noble impulse of mine evaporates.
Well, you hang on to it. I'm leaving now.
And, Randy...
Yeah?
Merry Christmas to you.
Right back at you, Chief. And thanks for the break. The revelers had gone now, and the office was empty except for one man. Old Ed Collins sat watching the teletype machines. He looked up when he saw me.
Thought you'd gone, Randy.
Nope.
What are you looking so smug about?
Our boss gave me 5 days off.
Swell. What are you going to do, go home?
Home is a bachelor apartment on 7th Avenue. No, Collins, I'm going to call my old pal Alex Stevens in Decatur and tell him to meet the morning train.
Good idea.
Long distance? I want to call Decatur, the Stevens residence. Alex Stevens in Decatur. I'll wait. Phone's ringing all right.
Good, good.
Oh, this little floor, Alec. 8 years he's been after me. Must have an old maid sister-in-law or something.
Careful, Randy. Tried to marry me off once when I was younger.
Should have answered by now. Oh, what's that, operator? Oh, no, no. No use ringing anymore. He must have gone out of town for the holidays.
Gone out of town, eh?
Yeah. I guess I'll have to settle for female company.
Not home either?
Well, that was a screwy idea. I don't know why I went for it. Phoning people the last minute like this.
Guy, with the friends you have...
Sure. The friends I have. Millions of them till I go looking for one.
Oh, there's a Christmas card for you on my desk. Keep forgetting to give it to you.
I'll get it later.
Hey, my folks only live 40 miles out. Boy, would they be glad to have you spend a few days with them. I could call them.
No, Ed, forget it. What's a guy like me want with a holiday on Christmas? I'm shoving off, Ed.
How about that envelope on my desk?
Later. Looks like I might be back to play a little pinochle with you.
Am I more? All I've got to do is phone
her. No, I'll make out all right. See you later.
And have yourself a time. Merry Christmas.
Yeah. Merry Christmas. I didn't want to make any more calls in front of Collins, so I headed for the nearest phone booth. Well, I made another 3-4 calls. No dice. Randy Stone, a guy who couldn't walk a downtown block without saying hello to half a dozen people, couldn't find one lousy bum would be his friend tonight, Christmas Eve. I went back to the office hoping some big story had broken so that I could put myself to work. Nothing come in, Ed?
Not a thing. Even the thugs are home tonight.
Anybody phone me?
No. Here's that letter I was telling you about.
Oh, thank you.
What's that, money?
It's a 50-cent piece.
What do you want, your autograph?
It just says, God bless you, Mr. Stone, signed Catherine Malloy. I don't know any Catherine Malloy. Hey, this is all the earmarks of an office gag and a pretty poor one at that.
It's half a buck.
Yeah, it'll buy a drink.
Say, Randy.
Yeah?
I thought maybe you'd change your mind about going out to my folks' place.
No, thank you, Ed. No, thank you.
My ma, she...
No, I said no. Ed, no, thank you. Outside it was snowing, light and fluffy, like it had been specially ordered for the occasion. And the people went about their business humming and singing little snatches of song. You know, oh, what fun it is to ride in the one-horse open sleigh. Yeah, there was warmth and good feeling everywhere. But my mood was more than a match for it, and I was beginning to feel sorry for myself. Like an unwanted cat, I took my mood out to get it drowned. at Bobby's bar.
Randy, how are you, boy? How are you?
Wow. What's with this place? It's like a morgue.
Why, haven't you heard? It's Christmas.
Yeah, I've heard. Will you put a dime in that thing and get something snappy?
Okay. There we are. Hey.
You lonely, Randy? Give me a whiskey sour, huh?
Yeah. That's the way it is with me, too. I don't need nobody. Nobody needs me. It's all right, I guess, only two or three times a year you wish it was different. You know when it hits me? Christmas, Easter, and May 17th. That's the date my mother died. But Christmas and Easter was a big time in our house. You know, we had 11 kids.
Look, why don't you write a book?
You act like this was something new to you. To me, it's like this every Christmas. You know, the important thing is don't be alone.
How much do I owe you?
50 cents.
Here.
You know, when you try and fight it, you gotta lose. Randy, are you going into a new business?
What do you mean?
Well, I thought maybe you might have gone into manufacturing.
Manufacturing what?
Coins. But, brother, if you are, you got a lot to learn. This is about the phoniest half a buck I ever saw.
Phony?
Yeah.
Give it to me. Yeah, That was somebody's idea of a gag. Some half-wit in the office.
Ain't much of a joke, I'll tell you.
Mrs. Malloy, huh? I'll fix those guys.
You gone?
Yeah.
Hey, well, what's your hurry? You ain't gonna leave me here alone, are you? Wait till somebody else comes in.
So long, Bob.
Well, you ought to stick around so we can talk, Randy.
You're wasting it on me.
Okay, Randy, but remember what I said. Don't be by yourself. Whatever you do, don't get to be alone.
I stopped at the corner drugstore and bought a couple of magazines and went to my apartment ready to spend a quiet holiday. 7 o'clock. Great. Nice long evening ahead of me. Lots of time to hate the world and feel sorry for myself. I poured myself a quick drink and then somebody rang my doorbell. Yeah, just a minute.
Hi.
A 10-11-year-old kid stood in the doorway looking up at me. His face was clean, but his clothes were patched and ragged. He wore a red pullover sweater at least 5 sizes too big for his skinny frame.
Hello, Mr. Stone.
Wow, what do you want?
Don't you remember me?
I remember 10,000 of you. What do you want, a handout?
I'm Jerry Malloy. Remember Mrs. Malloy?
Who sent you up here? Whose idea was it? McFarland's, the office wise guy?
My mother sent me.
Well, you go back and tell your mother not to send phony coins through the mails. And if your mother happens to be McFarland, tell him that...
She said for me to give you this letter. I'm to wait for your answer.
Look, kid, take your letter and beat it. Enough is enough.
She said maybe...
Will you take the letter? Now, come on, what are you waiting for?
I'll leave it with you.
No. Here's 2 bits for you. Now, go tell McFarland the joke is over. Now, beat it before I get mad.
Mother said to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Beat it. I no sooner slammed the door shut when I began feeling like a heel. And I opened the door half hoping I'd find him standing there. But he was gone. But resting on the mat in front of my door was the quarter I'd given him. I picked it up and I stood there with the coin burning my fingers. I knew I wouldn't feel quite clean again until I'd found that kid and made it right with him. Somehow. I had to get to the kid, but how? The logical starting point seemed to be the newspaper office. I put my coat on. I was about to leave when a sharp knock sounded on my door. I opened the door and a policeman came in.
Mr. Stone?
Oh, yeah, come in.
Thanks. I'm Lieutenant Saunders. Know anything about this?
Well, this envelope's addressed to me. Where did you get it?
Do you recognize it?
A kid came in here about 15 minutes ago and wanted to give it to me.
You sure this is the same letter?
Well, the writing's the same as another letter I got at the office. Why? What happened?
The boy who brought you this letter. What's his name?
I don't know. He said it was Malloy, but I don't think it is.
Give me a description.
Oh, he's, 10, 11 years old. Oh, 95 pounds. Light brown hair. Wearing a faded red sweater, patched trousers. What's this all about?
Hit by a car. Driver picked him up and took him away.
Hit? How bad?
Nobody knows. Woman who saw it from a window thinks the kid was dead.
The car got away?
Yeah. She didn't see the license number. When we got there, we found this letter on the street.
And the kid may be dead?
Yeah, looks like it. Said his name was Malloy, huh?
Yeah, that's what he said. Can I see that letter? Maybe there's something in it.
Sure. What's it say?
It's kind of hard to read.
Looks like some kid wrote it.
Dear Mr. Stone, we're hoping that you'll come out to have Christmas dinner with us. I told Jerry not to leave till he brings back your answer saying yes. It's signed Mrs. Catherine Malloy. I don't know a Catherine Malloy.
Well, maybe they mistook you for somebody else.
I thought it was part of an office gang, and I still think so. Let me go back there and check. I'll call you later.
Where do you work, Mr. Stone?
Chicago Star.
Oh, you're that Randy Stone. Well, look, if you get any information, phone it into the precinct.
Hi, Randy. What's the matter with you? Look like you've been run over by a streetcar.
Well, that's how I feel. Collins, you gotta help me.
Well, if I can, sure. What is it?
Now, first of all, tell me. Did anybody in the office plant a phony coin in an envelope and send it to me in a Christmas card?
Well, not that I know of. Who'd pull a crazy stunt like that?
I don't know. I gotta find out about that kid.
What kid?
Well, he came to my apartment with a message, and on his way home, he was hit by a car.
Bad?
A driver picked him up and took him away, and the cops think that he was dead.
And you don't know the kid?
No. He said his name was Jerry Malloy. He said it like it should have meant something to me. But it doesn't. I've never seen him before.
Well, maybe it's someone you've forgotten. A guy meets a lot of people in this business.
Yeah, that could be. I want you to do something for me, Ed.
What?
Check with as many of the boys you can reach at home. Find out if they know anything about the kid, and then phone the police and see if they've found him. If you want me, I'll be in the library.
What are you going to do there?
Well, something that makes me shudder, but I'm going to do it anyway.
What's that?
I'm going to dig back through all my stories for the past year and see if I can find a Mrs. Malloy.
Maybe you didn't use her name.
Well, I'll see what I can find. You get busy on that phone. Collins left me alone and I went to work. It's funny how inane some of the stuff you write seems after it's been buried. Only three of the bits offered any idea of who Mrs. Malloy might be. One, about a woman who'd refused to leave a cat in a burning house. Another, about a middle-aged lady bookie. And the last, about a woman and her family who were being evicted from a slum apartment for lack of rent money. The story was about the bystanders and how they dug into their pockets and raised 40 bucks so the woman could get back into her place.
How you doing?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think I've got something.
Well, I called the boys. They don't know anything about the kid or the letter.
You phoned the police?
Yeah.
Well?
They want you down to headquarters.
Me? What for?
To identify the kid. They think they found him.
Dead?
Not much chance to live.
Where is he?
State hospital.
It's a pleasant chore for Christmas Eve, isn't it?
Dandy.
Well, then I guess they want me to go and see his mother and say, guess what I brought you for Christmas.
Oh, snap out of it, Randy. It wasn't your fault.
Yeah. I phoned headquarters and they sent a radio car to get me. From there, we went to State Hospital. Lieutenant Saunders was there waiting for me. A nurse led us down a long hallway.
Severe concussions and possible internal injuries, the doc said. Doesn't think he'll live. In here. This is the boy. Go on, Stone. Take a look.
All right.
Well, is that him?
No, that isn't Jerry Malloy. For a minute, I felt a sense of relief, but I knew I was kidding myself. Sooner or later, Jerry's body would be found, and until then and after then, I'd feel the guilt to be mine. You see, by now I knew the kid was on the level. He'd been sent to me with a message offering me a home for Christmas, and in my blind stupidity, I sent him away. Nice guy, this Randy Stone. The cops dropped me off at the paper and told me they'd keep in touch.
Well?
No, it's not him.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to find Mrs. Malloy.
That 50-cent coin, that's what makes it interesting. Why money in a Christmas card and a phony coin at that?
Well, maybe she didn't know it was phony.
All right, then. She didn't know it was phony, but why was she sending you money? You lending the stuff out at 15%?
What? Hey, wait a minute. You got something there. Maybe she did owe me some money. That woman that was tossed out on the street, $40 we raised for her, she took my name and said she'd send me my $5 back.
Well, can you remember where she lived?
It was on the south side. I remember the building. Yeah, I can find her. Collins, I can find that kid's poor mother.
Well, isn't that what you wanted?
I don't know. You know what I really want? I'd like to start this whole evening over again. Think you could arrange it for me? I suppose I could have let the police handle it, but I'd developed a burning need to tell her myself. I hopped into a cab and went scouting for the building she'd lived in. I hoped I wouldn't find it, and yet I knew I wouldn't stop until I did. I found it all right, right where it had always been, pressed between the ugliness of two warehouses. I hung around outside for 10 minutes before I could find the courage to go and face her. Apartment 6 she'd lived in. I stood in front of it and listened to the muffled sounds of a radio playing dance music inside.
Well, hello, hello, hello.
May I come in? I've got to talk to you.
Oh, I'd like very much to have you come in, but my husband, he's a bouncer in the nightclub. Maybe some other time.
Look, Mrs. Malloy, I've got to talk to you.
What about Christmas Eve? Go away. Hey, what, Mrs., did you say I was?
Malloy, Catherine Malloy.
Ah. I'm not Mrs. Malloy. I never was, never will be. My name's Mrs. Manny, Carol Manny. You know, the more I look at you, the more I wish I was your Mrs. Malloy. But I'm not. I'm really not. How do you like that?
Well, I like it a lot more than you'll ever know. You know where I can find her? She lived in this apartment, oh, 4 or 5 months ago.
Never heard of her. Maybe if you ask the caretaker, he'll know.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll do that. Glad this woman wasn't Jerry's mother. I'd build a picture of Mrs. Malloy that didn't jive with a slightly tipsy frump staring at me out of hazy eyes. I called him a caretaker. Yes, Mrs. Malloy lived here, but she'd moved a couple of months ago and he didn't know where to. He told me to try Kozlov's grocery store. The storekeeper there was a living city directory. Mr. Kozlov?
None other. What can I do for you?
I'm looking for a Mrs. Malloy who used to live in the Elkin Apartments. I was wondering if you know where she'd moved to.
Malloy?
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes, I remember her, but I don't know where she moved to. A good woman. Didn't owe me a penny when she left.
I've got to find her.
She was working steady when she moved. Wages every week makes difference.
You think some of her neighbors would know where she moved to?
Oh, they do a big turnover in some of those places. But with wages coming in regular, I think I know how you can find her.
How?
It's a pattern people follow. When things can't be worse, then they live in places like the Elkin Apartments. But when they're working and a little money is coming in, they move up a notch. That's the way it works.
Where is this notch, this step up?
It's a gamble. But if I was you, I'd try Blake Avenue, somewhere around 20th. That's the way it goes, from Elkin to Blake. Sometimes back to Elkin. Sometimes not.
Sometimes 3 hours can be an eternity. It was 10 o'clock now. 3 hours since the kid had knocked on my door. The streets were full of happy, smiling people, and the snow made everything look like a Christmas display window in one of the big stores. I'd have given 10 years' salary to be like the people rushing into the stores for the last-minute presents for Aunt Agatha. I went into the stores all right, but to ask them if they knew where I could find a dead kid's mother. Took me about 15 calls to locate her. A druggist gave me her address. 1461 Burkell Street, apartment 9. Before going there, I called the office.
Hello?
Oh, Ed. Anybody phone?
Nope. I guess I haven't found him yet.
Well, how about the mother, Mrs. Malloy? You think she'd have called the police by now?
Yeah, you'd think so.
Well, maybe she didn't phone because she thought the kid was in good hands.
Well, it wasn't your fault, Randy.
Well, I've located her. And now comes the pleasant part of the job, telling her about it. How will I start? Merry Christmas, Mrs. Malloy, and a Happy New Year. May the new year bring you
off. Why are you going off the deep end like this, Randy?
Yeah, I know. It wasn't my fault. I was just an innocent bystander. So long. I made another call, police headquarters. They had nothing new on it. The kid would turn up, they said. He'd be pretty dead, but he'd turn up. I told them I was going to see the kid's mother, that I'd located her. Lieutenant Saunders thought that that would be a swell idea. I walked down the street to Mrs. Malloy's apartment house, and I stood there a minute. From where I was standing, I could see the sign on top of the Chicago Star building. Mrs. Malloy lived only 3 blocks from my smug little tower. From Star to empty apartment to Malloy and back to the Star. Well, that's the way it looked geographically as well as symbolically. Another 20 minutes wouldn't matter much, I thought. So I walked the couple of blocks it took me to get back to Bobby's Bar and Grill.
Hi, Randy. You're not making the rounds of the bars, are you?
No, no. Make it a double bourbon. Water.
Double bourbon?
Yeah, double. Not much trade tonight.
Ah, later they come. Randy, why is it hitting you so hard?
You scratch a little of the veneer off, and what do you find? A sentimental slob.
What's bad about that?
Well, then you find that you can't do things that have got to be done.
Like what? What needs being done tonight?
Like telling a woman that her young son is dead and that I had a lot to do with it.
You're kidding.
I'm not. How do you go about a job like that?
Well, how did it happen?
Does it matter?
No. You think whiskey will help?
Close the place up, Bob, and come with me. You don't have to say anything. Just stand there with me.
No.
It's a one-man job, huh?
As far as I'm concerned.
Well, maybe you're right. I'll see you later. Yeah, I'll see you later. I climbed up the creaky old stairs. It was no better than a tenement house. Only one thing distinguished it from a slum, and that was a cool, clean smell. The walls were torn and the woodwork was scarred and marred, but it was clean. I know it's crazy, but I got a lot of courage out of that feeling of cleanliness. I stood in front of apartment 9, listening. Then I knocked on the door.
Who is it?
It's me, Randy Stone.
Mr. Stone, how welcome you are. Come in.
Thank you.
I'll close the door to the children's room. They have only fallen asleep, and if they hear us, they'll be sure you're Sunday.
She walked away to close the door, and I wondered how I'd ever come to forget Mrs. Malloy. Her face was overflowing with a deep spiritual beauty that lighted up the whole room. She came back and sat down near me.
I'm so happy you hadn't forgotten me, Mr. Stone. I was afraid you might have. Then when I was able to make a small payment on that loan, I thought I would ask you to come to see us. God will never let me forget what you did for us that night, Mr. Stone.
Mrs. Malloy,
I don't mean to embarrass you, really, I don't. But I knew if you possibly could, you would share some part of Christmas with us. I knew that the old and shabby furniture would make no difference to you, this humble home.
But Christmas began in a humble home.
Yes, that's what I told Jerry.
Mrs. Malloy, about Jerry, I don't know how to say it.
Say what? What is it, Mr. Stone?
Well, about Jerry not being home.
I don't understand.
The bedroom door opened and a boy walked out. I caught my breath and held it. It was Jerry. Jerry!
Hello, Mr. Stone.
Jerry Malloy, go back to bed this minute.
Oh, no, please, let him stay. Jerry, I heard that you were hurt.
Oh, that. I was just shook up a little. The man drove me home.
Jerry, you didn't tell me about that.
It was nothing.
Jerry, when you knocked on my
door... I told Ma all about it. About the way you made me come into your room and have some fruit and candy. And how glad you were when you read that letter.
That's right. And he told me how you said you would get down to our house tomorrow night if it was the last thing you ever did.
That's what you said, wasn't it, Mr. Stone?
I
tell you, Mr. Stone, this boy of mine is uncanny. Do you know what he told me? He said he shouldn't be surprised if you came down to visit us tonight.
Did you say that, son?
Didn't you, son?
Yes.
Tell him your exact words, Jerry. Go on. Mr. Stone is no stranger.
Say it, Jerry.
I said,
I wouldn't be surprised if he even comes to see us tonight. He needs us that bad for Christmas.
In those three little rooms on the edge of the city's slums, I learned that human beings can find happiness. And don't listen to what your banker tells you. It's a thing of the spirit, not of the pocket. In that shabby little apartment with a cracked linoleum and a threadbare sofa, I learned the magic of the words, Merry Christmas. Copy, boy.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis, edited by Larry Marcus. Tonight's story was written by Warren Lewis and Lou Russoff, with music by Robert Armbruster. Featured in tonight's cast were Kate McKenna, Sammy Ogg, Ralph Moody, Jan Arvan, Bill Conrad, and Gail Bonney. Don Rickles speaking. Our star, Frank Lovejoy, and all of us on Night Beat wish you a very Merry Christmas. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Saturday morning, hear Mind Your Manners, and later the Somerset Maugham Radio Theater starring Peggy Ann Garner. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
That's the show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it. You can find more from Dragnet, Night Beat, and everything else case closed at relicradio.com. You'll also find all the other podcasts there, thousands of other old-time radio shows to listen to, and everything else Relic Radio. I'd like to help support this and all of the shows. You can donate through the website as well. We've got some downloadable sets for certain donation amounts, so any amount is always appreciated. Thanks to those who have helped out, and thanks for joining me today. Be back next week with Sherlock Holmes and Boston Blackie on another episode of Case Closed.